I Eat Green with Bhavani, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Wednesday. You're listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I am still on a high from the Long Island Small Farm Summit. We just had such a great event, and I'm just so glad that all of you that were able to make it were there. And listening to Joel Salatin was a wonderful thing. And I'm so happy to really feel like I'm part of a grassroots food movement here on Long Island. And it's very exciting. And it's also, of course, wonderful that it's now spring and we're able to be in the garden again. A few weeks ago, I talked to you about a tree paste that I was making, a biodynamic tree paste out of clay, cow manure, and diatomaceous earth. And I mix that together, and I put a little of a homeopathic preparation on it called Preparation 500. And I brushed that onto my peach tree that was really very sickly. And I think it's feeling better. It's looking happier. So I'm really happy to report that, and I'll keep you all posted on how my tree paste worked out. I have a very exciting show today. I have as my guest today Amanda Cohen, who is the chef and inspiration behind the wonderful vegetarian restaurant called Dirt Candy. And so I'll be bringing her on a little, and we'll talk about how she gets her inspiration. And before then, of course, I have a recipe to share with you. And this is a recipe. These are stuffed mushrooms. And I change them around often. I'll give you one typical way that I make them, and then I've been playing with them and changing them lately. So, mushrooms are a wonderful thing that can house just about anything. And so if you let your creative juices flow, you can do a lot with stuffed mushroom. And you can stuff different types of mushrooms as well. So, let me give you my recipe for stuffed mushrooms right now. You want to start with 15 large mushroom caps, okay? And these are the basic white mushrooms that we're going to use. If you wanted to stuff portobello mushrooms, you can do that as well, okay? So you're going to start with chopping the following vegetables very fine, some celery, an onion. You can put a very fine carrot in there if you want, or red pepper, just to give it a little bit of red color. It's very nice. And chop those. Then you need a tablespoon of chopped garlic, a quarter cup of olive oil, a quarter cup of red wine, one tablespoon of tamari, one half tablespoon thyme, one quarter cup parsley, chopped fine, salt and pepper to taste, two tablespoons of chopped walnuts, and two tablespoons of Parmesan cheese. Now, actually, if you're using cheese in this, if you're not worried about fat content or trying to make them dairy-free, you can, of course, put butter in there instead of the olive oil as well. And just makes them a little richer. So you're going to saute the celery and the onions. You're going to do it until they're translucent, along with the carrots. If you are putting red peppers in, you can, saute the carrots and the carrots and the onions first till they get translucent, and then add the red pepper in, because that doesn't take as long to cook. After about 5 minutes, you're going to add the garlic and the chopped mushrooms. And the chopped mushrooms are the mushroom stems that you've removed from the mushroom caps, okay, and you chop those and you put those in as well. After that's all soft and coming together and smelling delicious, you're going to add the walnuts and the parsley, Then add 2 tablespoons of red wine and the remaining ingredients. And adjust the spices to taste. Now, what I've also been doing is putting in, instead of the Parmesan cheese, I've added some feta cheese. Some feta cheese and like a tablespoon of dill to this recipe. And it's really delicious. So you can try doing that. So add some feta cheese instead of the Parmesan cheese and some fresh dill. And that's a really nice change. You can also add goat's cheese instead of the feta cheese, and that's also a really nice flavor. And if you're adding the goat's cheese, instead of dill, you might want to add tarragon and sage. You always experiment with different herbs and change them according to your mood. And fresh herbs are always the best. They have a much different flavor, a deeper it's more subtle, but it's fuller, if that makes sense to you. So try some fresh herbs. And that's it for the stuffed mushrooms. And then I want to invite Amanda on. Now, Amanda Cohen, let me just give you a little bit of her background before I invite her on. She graduated from the Natural Gourmet Cookery School back in 1998, and then she worked at an East Village vegan restaurant, Angelica's Kitchen, which is still around. I'm sure many of you have been there. And while she was working there, she was also interning as a pastry chef at Bobby Flay's Mesa Grill. And she did that for a year and a half. And then she worked as a vegan baker in the production kitchen of Blanche's Organic Cafe. While in the morning, while working in the evening as a prep cook at Other Foods, which later became Terra 47. In 2001, she found work as a line cook at the Diner Bar, an eclectic neighborhood bar and diner in Harlem. And then over the next 3 years, she worked there full-time and part-time, preparing everything from burgers, steaks, fish, comfort food. And it was a very fast-moving restaurant. I think she did about 200 covers per night. So she really got her hands used to working fast in that type of restaurant. And she's been cooking ever since. You know, she worked after that. She worked at a restaurant called Heirloom down in the East Village on Orchard Street, which I don't think is there anymore, but it was rated the best vegetarian restaurant in 2006. And where'd she go from there? Then she worked at Blossom for a little while. And now she's working. You know, she opened her own restaurant, Dirt Candy, a few years ago, I think in 2008. Is that right, Amanda? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I think 2008 is right. October of 2008, we opened the restaurant.
2008. So anyway, you've been all over. You've been, you know, doing it for a good 10 years now. More than 10 years.
More than 10 years.
More than 10 years.
Forever.
13, I guess. So did you always know you wanted to be a chef?
I didn't, but I always knew I liked to cook. And when I was growing up, I spent a lot of time cooking in my house and for my family. And it was just something I really liked to do. And after college, I was floundering. I didn't know what I wanted to do. But I did know I liked to cook, and I was traveling. And I wanted to keep traveling the world, but I needed a skill. I needed a way to pay for it. And I thought, well, maybe I could put two loves together. I could learn how to cook professionally, and then I could take this skill and travel with it, and anywhere in the world I could find a job as a cook.
Uh-huh.
So I did go to cooking school, and I went to cooking school in New York, and amazingly enough, I never left New York again.
Uh-huh. Are you from New York?
I skill and travel. No, I'm actually from Canada.
Ah, from Canada, okay. And what did you actually go to school for, if I may ask?
For university, I went for cultural anthropology.
Uh-huh.
It has not a lot to do with food, but it was
very
interesting.
Well, it has a lot to do with traveling and why, I mean, so much of food is, you know, it develops out of the culture, you know.
Well, that's definitely true.
You know, as I'm going into schools to teach cooking to school children, you know, one of the ways that we incorporate it into the curriculum is through the culture. And why do certain foods develop in a certain area, and, you know, what, you know, why are these traditional old-time remedies that they, or foods that they eat, why are they good for their health in those particular climates? So there's,
right.
You know, a lot of things that come out of, you know, traveling and anthropology. So it's not so far away after all.
It's not so far. I just don't get to do a lot of research these days, but it is actually fascinating, and there is a really interesting connection between old world and new world and food connections.
Definitely. Now, are you a vegetarian? I know your restaurant is. Are you a vegetarian too?
I am not a vegetarian. I was for many, many years, probably about, let's say, 16 or so. I became one when I was 15, and I loved being a vegetarian, but I felt that as a cook, it wasn't helping me. I couldn't experience enough of the great food that was out there if I was just limiting myself to what the vegetarian place at fancy restaurants. So one day I did decide that, you know, I don't think I can eat meat, but I can probably eat some fish, and maybe then I can really experience some of what these great chefs are doing. Have a better idea. And I have to say that I wouldn't recommend it for everybody, but it certainly helped me in my career.
So you eat fish?
I do eat fish.
Oh, me too. I also, very similar, Amanda. I love it. I became a vegetarian also when I was 16. And then I guess when I had children and felt like I needed, or became pregnant, I felt like I needed more protein, whatever, and then that's when I started eating fish. And I also, as a chef, have enjoyed being able to eat fish. It's given me more flexibility when I go out to some of these great restaurants and stuff.
Well, exactly. And, you know, one of the reasons we opened Dirt Candy is because I really felt like there weren't a lot of great options for vegetable lovers out there. And so even when I would go to great restaurants, I never felt like the vegetable was the star. And so I was losing out on an experience at one, some of these great restaurants in the city. And as a response, I opened Dirt Candy so that other people could actually come and enjoy vegetables. But to be able to grow as a chef, it was really important to eat other kinds of food.
Well, I think it's a great idea. I used to say to people, you know, you give me any meat recipe, and I'll transform it into a vegetarian recipe, you know, and make it, you know, just as delicious. And I think that's really kind of what you're doing here. It's really great to see someone doing that because, you know, I feel like you're doing what I would have done, except I wasn't crazy enough to want to be stuck in a restaurant all the time. Because that's I know what's involved. I also have worked in restaurants, so I know, you know, how attached you have to become to the restaurant, willing to, like, live there.
Basically, you just sort of move in when you open a restaurant, and I don't think you move out ever.
Right.
Like, you're almost 24 hours a day trying to make it perfect.
It is, and you're not even open for lunch, right?
We're not open for lunch, but the prep room opens at 8 a.m., and
right.
We start prep for dinner service at 5:30. All our dishes are really complicated, and for the size of our restaurant, we're very, very busy, so we just keep having to open earlier and earlier.
Well, I know. I'm waiting for my reservation. After I met you, I called to make a reservation, and it's weeks and weeks.
Right.
Or one can get a reservation. So I will be experiencing your restaurant. I wish I could say right now on the air that I've been there, but I've heard incredible things. So I'm really looking forward to visiting the restaurant. Now, was Dirt Candy an immediate success, or did you also have struggles?
Both. When we opened our doors, it was October in 2008, which was possibly the worst month in America's financial history, but we opened to a lot of buzz and people were really excited, so we did start getting customers in the doors almost immediately, and we were taking reservations and we were busier than we thought we would be from the moment we opened. Having said all that, it doesn't matter how busy you are when you open a new restaurant, you're still going to struggle. We could have been at full capacity every night and we still wouldn't have been able to meet all our costs. You don't know what they're going to be when they open a restaurant. No matter how many restaurants you've even opened, there's always something hidden.
Right.
So,
well, also, the size of your restaurant is small, correct?
It's tiny. We do only have 18 seats.
That's why I can't get a reservation.
It's true.
So with just 18 seats, I mean, it's hard to meet all your costs. Right, because, I mean, also with your recipes being so complicated, I would think people come and they want to dine for a while.
Well, they do, but we're very good at encouraging people to order as soon as they sit down, and, you know, we can pretty much have give you a really nice experience in the 2 hours that we have allotted for each table. We weren't necessarily so good at it when we first opened, but now we're very good at making the dining room run smoothly. So
I remember I worked at a vegetarian restaurant back in my teens. I mean, it was the only great vegetarian restaurant I think that ever even existed on Long Island. And unfortunately, they closed. They were called Little Easter, but it was also small, and they also had, like, live music. And so people would come in and spend the whole night. It was so hard to turn the tables, you know? It was too nice.
Well, that's one of the reasons we do have a blog, and we talk about, you know, the timing of the restaurant and how complicated it is. So most people, before they've even come to the restaurant, have already read something about the restaurant online.
So just out of being kind, they move on.
They do. They understand. And I think because we have reservations and people understand that we have another reservation coming in general, our customers are pretty understanding.
Yeah, I would think they'd have to be. That's good. That's good. So in your restaurant or in your own philosophy, do you have a food philosophy? You know, do you promote certain beliefs within your food philosophy?
I don't really. My number one belief about food is that it should be fun. I think food is what sustains us, and you should have a good time eating it every time you eat it. And if you don't, and if you're a cook and you ruined a recipe, it's okay. There's always a chance to make it again. We shouldn't feel so overwhelmed and burdened by this idea of food. It's we're going to have another meal in a couple of hours, so it's okay.
Right.
You know, you don't have to punish yourself if you think that you've eaten something unhealthy. It's okay. There's a whole, you know, new week coming up. And, you know, as a cook, I think we all sort of struggle with, oh, I bring this recipe, I didn't make it right, what am I going to do? And I just think, you know what, there's another opportunity. It's okay, we all make mistakes. My staff makes mistakes every day, and we correct it. We're all learning about it every single day. So really, my only philosophy is that it should be fun, and hopefully it tastes good. And if it doesn't, you know, use that as an opportunity to learn what went wrong and try again.
So how do you create a recipe? Like, do you have a process that you go through personally?
Well, I start with an idea about a dish. So our newest dish is our cucumber dish, and we name each of our dishes after a vegetable. We're really trying to highlight vegetables. So we have cucumber, and I knew I wanted to do something with cucumber, but what can one do? How does one sort of promote the flavor of cucumber? So I start reading about it and seeing what other chefs are doing with it and techniques that I might not even have ever thought about. And usually I spend some time on the internet just putting two words together, like cucumber cake or cucumber casserole, and seeing what pops up. And, you know, I take little ideas from here and there, and then I think, okay, well, I've never actually cooked cucumber, but I think that would be a really interesting flavor to develop, and a flavor that people don't necessarily associate with cucumber, and how does that change the flavor of it? So then we start playing around, and it takes us about from having the idea of what we want to do with the dish to putting it on a table for a customer to eat, good 6 to 8 weeks. We do a lot of testing with it. We're small, so the testing also comes at odd hours, maybe like half an hour in the morning 1 week, half an hour at night if it's quiet. So then we start testing it and seeing, like, how can we pull out a flavor that's familiar and different for customers. So with the cucumber dish, we have our tofu, and we're poaching it in coconut, and we thought that the creaminess of the coconut would go really well with the crunchy juiciness of the cucumber. And then we have the cucumber, and it's a hard flavor to define. It's
right.
Crunchy. Yeah,
it's a very subtle flavor.
Super, super subtle, but people do have an association with it. And so even as we're making this dish and we're braising it, and we have fresh cucumber and we have some deep fried pickles that we're putting on top of the dish, we knew it still wasn't enough. And so we decided just to puree it. Let's just give them that pure flavor of cucumber, and all of a sudden you have all these different layers of this one vegetable in the dish. So for us, it's about testing and playing around and seeing and elevating and it goes through a lot of changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, when you think about, you know, pickles or cucumber and cucumber soup, and then you hear about cucumber, you put it on your eyes, and, you know, it's good for your skin, and it's good for, you know, diuretic, and it's good for this, it's good for, but as far as how many different ways of eating it, I mean, I guess pickle is probably the most different flavor that people traditionally do with it. And now you're saying you deep fry the pickle?
Well, we make a very, very, very thin cucumber ribbons that we pickle.
Uh-huh.
And then we deep fry them. So there's just a layer of sort of like a pure pickle paste on top of the dish.
Wow. Wow.
And then we wanted to bring out different textures. So we have a tiny little relish, and we discovered that if you dice cucumber almost smaller than the eye can see, teeny tiny little brunoise, little tiny squares of cucumber, they almost pop in your mouth like a caviar. You don't know exactly what's happening in there, but you're getting these little pops as you bite into it.
Mm-hmm.
So then we do try and also bring out other little textures in the dish.
Right, right. You know, and I guess, you know, people don't think very often that, you know, it's a good idea to scoop out the seed part, right, so that you have the pulp of the cucumber, or the heart of the cucumber to chop up. Have you figured anything to do with the seeds?
Not yet, but we're still looking into it.
Uh-huh.
We did look at them, and I was like, you know, and sometimes we get cucumbers and we can use the seeds and we puree those, and sometimes they're just so tough, and we think, oh, well, they don't really even taste like much. Some vegetable seeds have a taste. And they're great. And, you know, we tried to toast the cucumber seeds.
Well, that's what I'm thinking of, right, like sunflower seeds, you know, or pumpkin seeds, you know. But I've never even thought of toasting cucumber seeds. So you did try?
You can try. They come out so wet, and by the time you're done toasting them, there's almost nothing left.
Right.
So even we tried dehydrating them, and we just didn't figure it out.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm very curious to see if you did. I'll let you do the work, and then just let me know. Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, let's see. I also wanted to know whether you try to source any of your foods, like if you, you know, are concerned with trying to source locally and support local vendors, or do you just are, you know, your foods more obscure that you just have to go where you have to go to get them?
Well, no, actually, our food is pretty standard. So we have a couple of exotic ingredients here or there, but I actually call my cooking mostly supermarket cooking. You can make almost everything we make from a supermarket.
Uh-huh.
Or a green market, it doesn't matter. Yes, and maybe we're lucky because I can order 3 different colored carrots, but if you wanted to try any of our dishes at home, you'd be just fine if you only had orange carrots.
Right.
I do think supporting local businesses are great, and local vendors are great, and when we can, we try to go to the green market.
Mm-hmm.
But we are really small, and we don't have a lot of extra staff to send out. So for one of us to go to the green market, we have to get up incredibly early and go to the green market and pick up all our stuff. And then the truth is, we live a little bit far from the green market, so we have to take a taxi back to the restaurant.
Right.
And somehow
right.
in all that, we think, well, maybe we should just call our purveyor who actually does source a lot of local things when they can. Like in the summer, certainly most of our produce is local through our purveyors.
Mm-hmm.
And let them do the work. Sometimes we think it's okay to be a little lazy.
Right. Well, you're far from lazy. The easy path doesn't always mean lazy. Sometimes, like you said, it's smart. You know, it doesn't necessarily make sense to go, you know, halfway across and your time's utilized better in other ways.
Exactly. And we do try. And when we can and when things are in season, more importantly for us is really using things that are in season. If we are using things or produce that's in season, we know it's coming locally, just in general.
Well, so especially if you have a purveyor that you trust, you know, and so that's, you let them do that work.
Yeah, no, and we have a couple of great purveyors, and they're really good, and, you know, we have a cauliflower dish, and as soon as we put the cauliflower dish on, as usually happens with us, there was some cauliflower disaster. There was a drought, and no cauliflower was growing, and we've had all these beautiful pickled purple cauliflowers, and the only thing we could get that was sourced at all locally was just regular cauliflower. And we were like, okay, we're just going to let the purple cauliflower go. It's not worth it for it to come from, I don't even know where they were going to start sourcing it from. Mm-hmm. It's going to fly for like 2 days to get here. We'll just pickle regular cauliflower and it'll be okay.
Right. And I'm
so
sure
it was. It was good. It's nice. We're very happy that the purple cauliflower is back.
Good.
It took us 3 months.
Well, how often do you change your menu?
It's changed seasonally, but one dish at a time throughout the season. So one of the problems that we've encountered is, you know, March 21st happens, and everybody thinks, well, spring is here. Why isn't your spring menu here? And we have to say, well, we wish it was here, but vegetables don't all necessarily pop up on the first day of spring.
Right.
It does take some time throughout the season for them to grow. And it's the same thing with the summer or the fall vegetables. So we're pretty honest. You know, we don't have necessarily a spring menu that's going to debut on April 1st because they've all grown and we're ready for it. We change dishes as vegetables become more readily available.
Uh-huh.
So about once every 6 weeks or so, maybe every 2 months, we get a new dish on the menu. And it is based on the vegetables and how they grow.
Well, that makes sense. You actually, although you have to do some of your testing ahead of time before it's actually, you know, the seasons aren't that long. And so sometimes you have to start doing your testing with, I guess, ones that you do get from a warmer climate or something like that. So that it's ready when the season's ready.
Last summer we knew we wanted to put a pea soup on. And we were lucky. We can test with frozen peas. So, you know, we do find ways around it. And then as soon as the fresh peas started coming in, we that's how we put it on the menu. But right. We were able to start testing a couple of weeks in advance.
Right, right, of course. So anyway, I don't want you to go anywhere, but we do need to take a few-minute break.
Okay.
And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. And then, you know, I don't know if you have the desire or would like to share anything about a particular recipe, but there's the space to do that if you do want to do that.
Okay.
Okay? Anyway, so we'll be back in just a few minutes. Okay?
All right.
Thanks.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network. Do you want to listen to your favorite PRN show in your car or when you're out for a jog? You can download any show on the archives at any time. Visit the archives at progressiveradionetwork.com/archives. We can also be found in the iTunes store under Progressive Radio Network. All our archives are free, so go ahead and check them out. Thanks for listening to the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned to stay informed.
I'm Gary Knoll. I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
This is Bill Bowie.
And this is Kelsey Flynn.
Of Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability.
We bring you news and interviews
with the likes of Wangari Maathai, Bill McKibben, Hazel Henderson, Paul Hawken, Francis Moore LePay, and many others. Tune in to Sea Change Radio here on the Progressive Radio Network on Saturdays at 7 in the evening.
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani on the Progressive Radio Network with I.E. Green. And my guest today is Amanda Cohen. She's the owner, chef, and inspiration behind the wonderfully award-winning restaurant Dirt Candy. Amanda, are you there?
I am here.
Hi. So welcome back.
Thank you.
Well, first, why don't you just tell people where your restaurant is in case they don't know of it.
It is in the Dirt Candy's in the heart of the East Village. It's on 9th Street between 1st Avenue and Avenue A.
Okay. And with all that you do, I'm just completely impressed with how you find time to blog. How do you manage that?
Well, we just take some time out from the day. It's such an important part of the restaurant. So usually over the weekend, I know that I have a couple of posts that I want to do. And so I write them up. And then throughout the week, I edit them. And I have somebody else look over them and edit them. And then we just put them up. And I think we talked about the restaurant's so small. And so when we can get people to sort of read about the restaurant before they come, it feels like they're already actively a part of it, and then mm-hmm. they can go home and read a little bit about it afterwards. I feel like people don't think that their time here is so short. They get to continue on with the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worth it to find a time. And I have a staff who works for me, and they let me take some time out every day to do it.
Oh, that's good. It's really nice to have a supportive staff. Now, how large is your staff? Like, do you have people in the kitchen with you as well as on the floor?
I have one server who works with me on the floor, and at night I have one cook and a dishwasher who work with me. And during the day, I have somebody a prep person who helps me out as well.
Mm-hmm. So in the evening, you're out on the floor, not in the kitchen?
I'm out on the floor, and I'm in the kitchen.
Both.
I stay in both.
Uh-huh. That must be a challenge.
It is. It's a lot of fun. It's 2.5 years ago, I didn't think I was going to be able to do it. I had served a couple of times in my life, but not seriously. And 2.5 years into it, I think, okay, I might not be the world's best server, but here we are, and we're doing it, and people seem to be happy. And it's actually been probably one of the best experiences of opening Dirt Candy, I think. To see people respond to the food and be able to talk to them and make it so much more of a one-on-one experience with our customers mm-hmm. has been amazing. And I actually recommend that all cooks and all chefs serve a little bit. It does change how you feel about the food and serving the food. And as a chef who plates food and who wants to make the food always pretty, and you know, you make these impossible towers, and then when you're the server who actually has to carry those plates,
mm-hmm.
you realize, like, okay, I don't think some of these dishes are going to work.
Right.
I cannot get it to the table without it all falling over. So it does help you sort of be more mindful of who's out on the floor and who's serving and what it's like to serve it to a customer and see customers' reactions. And also as a chef, sometimes you have an idea that how something should be plated and how it should be eaten. And then when you serve it to a customer and you watch them eat it, and it's not instinctive, it's not natural, you think, okay, I think I have to replace this whole dish because it's not instinctive for the customer. So it is so important to see how customers react to the food.
Right, right. I think that's a really good point. And, you know, how they dismantle the food. I've seen some of your towers. Actually, one tower, I should say. I was at a demonstration that you did out in Long Island at the Reconstruction Synagogue. That's where I
right.
met you. And you made a wonderful dish with saffron yogurt.
Right.
What was that dish?
So that was it was a beet pasta.
Oh, my God, is it good.
And the saffron yogurt sauce and the roasted beets. And that's a great dish. And that's there's lots of complicated components to it, but that yogurt sauce is great. And it's so easy. And people don't think about using yogurt as a sauce. And if you use particularly one of the Middle Eastern yogurts that's thicker, or you can make your own thick yogurt just by putting it in a strainer overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And all the extra liquid sort of slowly drifts away from it. And
mm-hmm.
you use that as instead of like a heavy cream or a milk, and it's so good for you, and it's so creamy and tangy, and you have to add almost nothing else to it, maybe a little bit of salt and, like I did, a pinch of saffron.
Right. Now, is that a standard recipe at the restaurant?
It is. Right now we do have a yogurt and saffron sauce.
Yeah.
And it is, we use it with the zucchini pasta, and it's great.
Right. And I remember you saying that you use full-fat yogurt, correct?
I do.
Now, have you... What would happen if one was to try to substitute a lower fat? Like, I know, and I really appreciate, actually, you saying, you know, that you use full-fat things, because a lot of times, you know, and in a lot of philosophies, you know, people believe that, you should use it the way it's made, you know, the way that,
right.
You know, as opposed to low-fat butter or low-fat sour cream. And, by the way, for those people listening, very often, low-fat or non-fat yogurt's not one of them, but sometimes in order to take the fat out, they put other artificial stuff in, like people that use fat-free sour cream. I mean, that's an oxymoron. There's no such thing.
Well, no, exactly. I guess my feeling was, I think you could. I think particularly those 0% fat Greek yogurts that they sell now, I think actually that would work fine. They're so creamy and dense, and I think they do use it from skim milk, and there are no additives.
Right, especially that's the Greek one, you know, the Greek or
yeah.
The European style, they say.
Exactly. I think always that it's better to use a little bit less of something that's the way it's supposed to be versus using more of, let's say, a low-fat sour cream. I'd rather use full-fat yogurt and maybe only half of it versus, you know, having to keep adding something to, like, a half-fat yogurt or a low-fat yogurt that just doesn't have the same amount of flavor. You're going to get such a more satisfying reaction.
Right, right. Well, you know, Michael Pollan says, you know, eat real food. Not too much of it, you know, mostly vegetables. And so, you know, it's so important for people to really, I think, eat real food. You know, and I think you had mentioned, you know, that your food might not be the healthiest, but I'm because of the philosophy I'm sharing with you, I don't think that's really true. I think your food is healthy, even if you're using some full fat, although I guess some of the frying might be considered not so healthy by some people. But again, you're going out to eat. It's a, you know,
well,
it's not an every night experience.
I don't expect people to come to my restaurant every night. It's not that kind of restaurant. So I think if I had a restaurant that was called Everyday Dirt Candy, it would be different. But it's not, and we do expect people to come, you know, once a month or every 2 months or however often they come. But to me, it's a treat. To me, going out to eat is still a treat, and it's a party. You want to treat yourself. And the rest of the week, you're eating at home. So this one night, it's okay.
Uh-huh.
You know, I always have people who are like, oh, I don't know. You know, there's so much fried food on your menu or there's so much fat. And the truth is there isn't. And you can certainly ask us to do whatever you want. You know, if you don't want something fried in your dish, we can almost always accommodate it. But they're just little bites of something extra crispy and crunchy that's decadent.
Right.
And we want you to feel like you're getting a treat when you come here.
And, you know, for a vegetarian, that is so important because, you know, so many vegetarian restaurants are actually, as a vegetarian, I usually choose not to go to vegetarian restaurants because they are, you know, blander or just not as creative. You know, they usually are much more straightforward, and that's how I cook at home. Well, actually,
right.
I don't cook like that at home. I just bet it. So very often I walk away from a vegetarian restaurant feeling a little disappointed or like it wasn't a treat. You know, they spent all this money and I didn't come away with that feeling, you know?
Right. Well, and definitely in Dirt Candy, we just want you to feel like you've had a really fun experience.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a treat. And every once in a while, it's okay.
Right. Now, how large a party can you accommodate there, being such a small restaurant?
Well, we've done 16 to 25 people. 25 is very squishy, but we have done it.
Oh, so they take up the whole restaurant.
And they take up the whole dining room, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, that's an idea.
But we can do anything from one person to 25.
Uh-huh. So how far in advance do you have to book?
If you want to be 25 people, we need about 3 months' notice.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, that's not too bad. That's a real special thing for, you know, a vegetarian to do on a special occasion.
Exactly.
A real treat.
We get lots of parties around graduation time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, we're right next to NYU, so lots of get big parties for when kids graduate.
Oh, that's great. Great idea. Great idea. So what else do I want to ask you while I have you on the phone about your restaurant. Anything else you'd like to share about your restaurant?
No, just I hope people come and try it. And, yes, definitely make a reservation. We are small, and right now we're booking about a month in advance. So.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it was for me, a month. And there was something else I wanted to ask you. You also have won quite a few awards, haven't you?
I have. We've been really lucky over the last 2.5 years.
Not lucky. You deserve it.
Well, we all work really hard to make it happen.
Uh-huh.
But there's a lot of other people who work very hard out there, so I think we are still lucky. But we've won lots of best vegetarian restaurants. I think we're the highest rated vegetarian restaurant in Zagat right now. We're Bib Gourmand from Michelin, and just lots of, you know, Village Voice loves our grits, Metro Mix, best vegetarian restaurant. We've sort of been fulfilling our goals, some of them.
Uh-huh. Do you have any plans for expansion?
Not yet. Right now we're still just making sure the restaurant is the best it can possibly be, no matter how hard we work and how many awards we win and how busy we are. We always think there's room for improvement, and we always know there's things we can do a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. And you do try to experiment with some more obscure or not as common vegetables in our world. You know, I mean, there's so many vegetables that, you know, I haven't heard of. You know, when I do travel and you come across another vegetable. You know, I mean, for instance, like a jicama, which is now becoming much more common, you know,
right.
You did not know of it at all. Has that featured on your menu yet?
We haven't dedicated any dishes to exotic vegetables yet. We're still just making our way through the more standard traditional vegetables, like, you know, celery, carrots, cucumber, cauliflower. But we do try to put in... With each dish, we have sort of a complementary vegetable. So with our cucumber dish, we have salsify.
And you have what?
Salsify.
What is that?
It's like a long root vegetable. It has it's almost has a similar taste to a little bit, to like a Jerusalem artichoke.
Uh-huh.
It's nutty and crunchy and a little has an inherent saltiness to it, and so we've complemented that with the cucumber because it's still crunchy like a cucumber, but a different kind of crunchiness to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have fresh hearts of palm, which are really interesting, something that I had never worked with beforehand. Not at all like what comes out of a can.
Mm-hmm.
They're just sort of creamy and nutty too, and so we have this really nice balance of the two nutty vegetables with the juicy cucumber. So we do like to sort of tuck exotic vegetables into each dish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really nice. I mean, you know, to have the luxury to play with a vegetable, you know. We do, normally, you know, for so many people, you know, moms and dads alike, you know, you just have to put a meal on the table and, you know, you work with what you have or what you know. But very often... we don't have the luxury of the time to really experiment and play with different vegetables.
Right. Well, it is a luxury. So even, you know, I get to cook a lot at the restaurant, and we do get to play around a lot. But I go home, and I'm not a big cook at home. People always ask, you know, oh, what does chefs cook at home? And usually it's cereal. So time is a problem for all of us at home.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe not cereal, but definitely something quick.
Something quick. Well, I'm actually never home for dinner, so it is usually breakfast that I get to be home for.
Uh-huh. Now, your husband is not in the business with you, is he?
No, he's not.
Okay.
At all. And it's a very good thing. I really admire couples who've been working together. But it's nice to be able to go home and talk about something else than the restaurant.
Right, I would think so. And you probably still talk a lot about the restaurant, even at home.
Way too much.
Uh-huh. Right. So what kind of food do you cook at home besides cereal? Like, when you come home after Tokyo, I guess you said you pretty much eat at the restaurant?
Yeah, after the restaurant, I go home to bed. I finish up at midnight every night, and I have to be back at the restaurant by 9 a.m. the next day, so I certainly do not have a hard partying chef lifestyle. I'm home, and I'm asleep by hopefully 12:30.
Mm-hmm.
At the latest, maybe 1, and then I'm back up. So on the weekends, I have some time off, but that's when...
a really nice thing. I think that, you know, I think that's a real key to carve out that time and not get sucked into the 24/7 that most restaurants end up doing.
Right. Well, it was really important for me when we opened the restaurant that everybody who worked for me got to have a life. So we're open 5 days a week. We all work 5 days a week. And that way everybody gets a weekend. You might have to work very hard during those 5 days and maybe a little bit longer than we all would like, but you do get a weekend. And it was important for my life, and so I assume it's important for everybody who works for me.
And you're closed, what, Sunday and Monday?
We're closed Sunday and Monday. We actually do have a couple of people who come in on Monday who help out for the week, so we just get a little bit organized before Tuesday starts.
Uh-huh.
And I'm usually here Monday as well. But that's okay. It's my business, so, and it's a much more relaxed day.
Mm-hmm.
And we do a lot of the paperwork on Monday, all the accounting and the bookkeeping and that kind of thing.
Right, right.
So
have to allow time for those things as well.
Those things, the things that keep the business running apart from the food.
Uh-huh.
And, but on Sundays and Mondays, actually, I don't usually cook at home, so we go out to eat. I always want to see what's new and exciting out there.
Uh-huh.
And my husband doesn't eat at the restaurant every night, so he's bored of cooking 5 nights a week for himself, and he wants to do something else, too.
Right, right. Well, that's good. Sometime, I'd love to ask you some other restaurants that you recommend, too, because I really find it a struggle. I mean, as a chef, and I don't know if you probably experienced this, too, you go out to eat, and, I don't mind spending a lot of money for a good meal because I know what it takes, and I know that you've had to defend that sometimes. I heard you talk, people get surprised if it's $50 a person, it's just vegetables,
Right.
They don't mind spending that for a steak, but, and yet people who don't cook vegetarian have no appreciation for how much work it is. It's much more time consuming, much harder to, create a good vegetarian dish than it is to stick a piece of meat in the broiler. I'm a
right.
private chef as well, and I cook for clients who do eat meat. And, if I need to get out quickly, I can put, meat on the menu and I'm out so much quicker.
Right.
And if
right.
I have to cook vegetarian, I feel like I'm cheating. It's like a whole big meal that makes them so happy, and all I did was stick it under the broiler or on the grill, or, it's really like cheating. But do you find when you go out to a restaurant that you very often walk away disappointed? I know as a vegetarian or as a chef, I don't mind spending a lot of money for a good meal out. But when I go out and I'm spending a lot of money and I feel like it's not as good as what I'd make at home or, it's frustrating. Do you share that experience?
I sometimes do. At this point, I'm just really excited that I'm not cooking. So I get to be a little bit less disappointed than I used to. I don't have to do the dishes. I don't have to. It's not my problem if it just didn't come out perfectly, so I get to relax a little.
Oh, good.
And well, I used to, really when I was before I owned my own business and I could see other kitchens working and other floor staff working, I'd be like, I don't know, I think I could do this better. I don't know, why did this take so long? Whatever the problems were. And now I'm like, it's not my problem. I'm
right.
just hungry. I need some food. I can relax a lot.
Well, that's really great then. That's good.
And sometimes I do get disappointed, but sometimes I get excited. So I'm always, and now I'm trying to teach myself to really look for the high points of the meal and not dwell so much on the low points, of which there often are.
Right. Well, that's a really great tip of advice. I thank you for that. It's always better to focus on what's being done right and use some of the other things for an inspiration to improve yourself. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for joining me on the show. It's been really great.
Thank you so much for having me.
Many of my listeners have appreciated it, because I think the majority are people that eat the way that you or the way that we cook. And hopefully I will see you in the restaurant very shortly.
Well, I look forward to that.
Thank you. And I'm really happy to know that I'll see you out on the floor.
You will definitely.
Great. All right. Well, thank you again. And everybody, check out Dirk Candy. Say your address again and your phone number.
East 9th Street in the East Village. And the phone number is 212-228-7732.
Great. Thanks, Amanda. Have a great one.
Thanks so much. You too.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, all my listeners out there, I want to thank you again for joining me on this beautiful Wednesday. And I look forward to being in the garden the rest of the week, and I will see you next week. Have a great week.